visit Sayado de Janeiro at the study center with folks from the community on June 26th or 7th.
May 26th.
Okay. So,
anybody who practices here? Tell a little bit about your practice, he says. Maybe difficulties or experiences you've had in your practice. Then the discussion can roll from there.
Does he suggest that we treat wholesome states of mind the same as unwholesome states of mind? Because there's a sutta that says if it's a wholesome state of mind, don't poke the cows so much, let them roam, but if it's unwholesome, then you have to be very careful and mindful of unwholesome states. So in his frame of reference, would we treat them both the same, or would we allow the wholesome to stay without, or would you investigate it just the same?
ကုသိုလ်စိတ်နဲ့အကုသိုလ်စိတ်ကိုရဲ့ဥစဉ်ကဘောထားအတူတူနဲ့ဆက်ဆံမလားတဲ့ဘာလို့ဆိုတော့သုတ်တန်တစ်ခုရဲ့မှာရထားတယ်တဲ့ကုသိုလ်စိတ်ဆိုရင်နဲ့နွားလိုပဲသွားတော့မထိုးနဲ့တဲ့သူကသူပေးသွားပါလိအကုသိုလ်စိတ်ဆိုရင်တတိထားမယ်ပေါ့လိဘာဆိုသူ့မှာအကျိုးတရားကိုရှိလို့အဲ့တော့ဥစဉ်ကဟိုကုသိုလ်စိတ်ဆိုရင်လဲဥစဉ်တင်တဲ့ထက်မှာ He says, the Buddha taught, you know the Patimokkha, he says, the Buddha said, do as much of the wholesome thing, you know, as much as you can of what is wholesome by thought, deed, or word. It's, you know, do good is the first
thing.
And then, but the second part is to avoid as much as possible everything that is unwholesome by thought, deed, or word. Let's avoid evil. But he said there's a last part, purify the mind. And purify the mind means to understand things as they really are. So you have to investigate these states in order to understand it at that level.
So you give equal emphasis to both. Because my tendency, my mind is to pay more attention to the unwholesome states of mind because you're so unpleasant.
Tuma, era uzin biora, na kuzilo, tu ni re a, kuyu sai mu pimula, rebasa tu ye do, tuwa. He says, yes, in the beginning, you should pay more attention to the unwholesome states of mind because they affect the mind badly. But when right understanding has come and the mind can understand that everything that arises is just mind. He says at that point, the mind can investigate both equally in the same way. He also pays more attention to the defilements, unwholesome mind states. For example, between metta and dosa, he keeps more of an eye on dosa. Between metta and aversion, yeah. He's more of an eye on aversion. Because if you understand dosa, then if you understand aversion, then aversion doesn't come anymore. Then what you're left with when there is no aversion in the mind is loving kindness, metta.
So he's not concerned about becoming attached to wholesome states of mind?
Usia, come, let go, say go, swear, mau, so you know, and I'm the Yumsai.
Yumsai, 나는 이지나 소야 뭐 또만에 비야 보고도 보고 니처럼 디다 소야 뭐
그것도 오
소야네
아 소야네 아
yes 그렇죠
he says you have to be to watch out for that too you know
공성에서
디바스 공성에서 또 나이세 그냥 세 양이 소는 나 그거 시시가 있지요. He says and in the three things he spoke of just now, avoid evil, do what is good, purify the mind. He says avoiding evil is what we call sila, doing what is good is what we call samadhi, purifying the mind is what we call wisdom.
그냥
세 양이 소는 누가 고사나 아오사나 시시가 있지요. He says but when you get to the when you get to the stage of wisdom, he says, then you take what is wholesome and unwholesome and observe them in the same ways. At that point, he says, the mind already understands. Mind is just the mind. Mind is just mind, not somebody, not a person or being. He says, in the beginning, you know, avoiding. He says, so there's the avoiding of the evil, and then the avoiding of the evil, then the second one is doing good. That's the samadhi level. He says at that point is the learning not to attach. He says you gain samadhi, but it's important not to get attached to that and just stay stuck there. He says that's why the Buddha taught right to the end, which is to get to the point of wisdom.
I'm wondering, Sanjay, if you can explain the Bahia story in a way that I could understand it.
Bahia the Buddha.
And both parts,
yes.
Not just in the scene is what is seen, but also the part, then the way I understand it is sort of, if you're not in here, and if you're not out there, you're not in between, then that's the complete ending of suffering.
He says, when we say in seeing, just seeing, so the understanding is that something is just as it is. He says, but when a true insight arises and understands that something is just as it is, he said, that's when the mind that is observing is not holding any attitude towards the object. It doesn't have any greed, aversion, nor delusion in the mind, and that's why the mind understands what it's observing as it is. He knows that some people think of, you know, seeing, just seeing, hearing, just hearing. He says they kind of develop a lot of concentration, and then, like, when they look or listen or, you know, feel other sensations, there's so much concentration, the mind cannot think about what they're experiencing, and so the mind is kind of staring at it in a zombie state, not thinking. He says, but that's not in seeing, just seeing, you know. That sort of state is where the mind is just a zombie. It just doesn't understand anything about what it's experiencing or perceiving, but that doesn't mean it understands things as they are. He said, for example, if you talk about seeing, he says there's the object of seeing, the mind that's seeing, and so there's the consciousness and the object, and and nobody there. This is understanding that the object is the object, the nature of the object, the mind is the mind, the nature of the mind, and there's nothing else. And he says you could understand it at that level, or you could understand impermanence in that, or you could understand impersonality in that, or you could understand the undependability of this, like the fact that you cannot hold on to anything here. And anything you understand in the moments of understanding, he says, that's just as it is. And when the Buddha talked about it's not out there or in here or out there, he says he's talking about don't attach to any of these concepts. Like, don't attach to the object nor the mind. Understand the nature of things as it is.
When there's just cognizing.
Just cognizing. When you meshi, not body, but little. When he says, even if you see there's just cognizing, there's still object in mind. Therefore, cognition. So, if there's cognition, then what is being cognized?
Does
what
it
is
mean cognition?
If there's no papancha, he says it means that some wisdom must be present. It's only when greed, delusion, aversion are not present in the mind, there's no papancha in the mind.
So, but he has saw everything without any greed, hatred, and delusion at that point.
He? What?
Bahia
saw everything.
Bahia.
He saw with wisdom. Yes. So wisdom is present. Therefore, greed, aversion, and delusion become absent. He says, when wisdom is present, delusion is not present. When there is no delusion, then greed and aversion cannot take root. That's when it's seen as it is. He has to depend on the staff. Yep.
This is my goal. When I was practicing yesterday and before, I was looking at my mind, okay, and it was really, really effective because I actually saw this contraction. Realized how contracting my mind is tight, like generally it just seemed really tied up, you know. And then I started wondering, well, what is the mind? Anyway, what is the mind? It feels like it's alive, it feels like it's powerful, like it's almost material, it's almost like physical. And I was wondering if he knows something.
That's a good idea. Take tea out there. Let's do money on it. To me on it. To cheap with Joe's on it. Bob, me, let's go. To say, I'm here. Chan it. I'm here. Ten time. Do I turn out the child people? I'm here. I'm here. So tired. I'm here. Ten months. I'm here. 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 He said it's true when he says when we practice watching the mind a lot, that's how it feels. He says in the beginning the mind seems elusive because we're just not used to watching it or practicing with it. But he says once we make the effort and practice, you know, knowing the mind, he says it becomes, like you say, as palpable and as clear as if you were watching sensations.
Okay.
or body? He says, so if we didn't know the mind, he says, it wouldn't be possible to keep it happy
or in it,
for it to be peaceful or happy in a good state. Wouldn't, he says there wouldn't not be any condition for it to be in a good state. He says only when we recognize what is happening in the mind, like the mind is wound up, he says then we have the choice to really do something about it, and you know, because we see what is truly there, if we learn to work with it and it goes, well, it's real, then you know you're really free of that. He says, and the mind, you know, is happy sometimes, unhappy sometimes, and so on. And it goes through its motions. And if we're watching these things all the time, he says, slowly we begin to also detect why it becomes happy, why it doesn't, why it becomes unhappy, and so on. And the investigation goes on. We learn to deal with it. How the thoughts affect our emotions. How our ideas affect us. The feelings. We see how much our ideas govern the way we are. He says, we've never checked out, like, never assessed the ideas or beliefs we hold in our mind. We don't know we're working through them. They're just doing their job. He says when we, you know, when we were young, there were already many values that we took on simply because we didn't know any better. And if we don't re-evaluate these things, he says, we carry on with old ideas about how things should be without really knowing whether it's still valid, whether it's maybe too much or too little. So we need to watch to be able to re-evaluate them. It's interesting to watch the mind. He says once somebody starts to understand their mind a little more, he feels very happy.
My question is about kind of the third aspect of the continuity you've been referring to, the purification or purifying one's mind. I do a variety of practices, and I kind of am asking for Sayo's opinion about. Many of my teachers are Tibetan, and there's purification processes that you go through. And I've been practicing them in conjunction with my awareness practice, which has taken a much more prominent role. I guess what I'm asking is, does Sayo agree with the fact that these practices can be combined into in a skillful way in practice? Because many of the Western teachers that we have visited kind of don't necessarily promote, but they're very accepting of the combination and meshing of the two lineages and schools and styles.
Tu atu mama doro jawi tu aku say senjir lepas itu tu api bro tu aku juga bi atu mana, jadi tu aku tu siari mian ya cipe siari lepite tu lu cara belu pungsan tenai sro, oh tu lu mah exercise tu mian mian sini, ini hari caca lawe seku piu senjir le, oh cini bo alu mian pure. Now, bro, to the deal, actually, the deal is to atu mure ma po po bro, a ya jela, bro, a ya jela. Era to a tijena, dameti nakua, poundi atu lu ya. Yes. Yeah, he says, you know. Ultimately, what's important is awareness, samadhi, and wisdom. And he says, no matter how you develop it, or what you call it, or how you do it, it doesn't matter. The words don't matter. four, three.
I often observe myself wanting other people to do poorly so that I will look better.
You have to tell you who nyan pong some pause in a moy a low matos in you to chiloka on road.
Yes.
He says, you know your mind. That's great. He says, it's the nature of the mind to always want to be one up and see others as one down. This is nature. It's only when this is seen that we have the choice to change it.
That is my question, how to work skillfully with those observations.
Dari, the ditami bibalo
on me.
He says, look at how it feels when the mind has a thought like that. He says, you will see that it's not very pleasant. He says, and if you recognize this feeling every time the mind has such thoughts, the mind will become so familiar with the unpleasantness of it, the mind will start to not want to be that way. And he says, at some point, he says, the mind will not only, it's not just the unpleasantness of it, the mind will also start to realize it's not necessary to be one up to, you know, and then it also understand that this is really not wholesome or skillful actually to have a mindset like that. Yes, and once the mind understands all these things, it'll just easily let go. Wait, you're five. There's four, sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've been investigating sleepiness a bit and noticing that when I was sitting primarily on a cushion on a tree, intense sleepiness would come up. I sort of labeled it soft and temper, but didn't really do a whole lot of investigating. Doing a whole lot more practice off the cushion while I'm driving, while I'm working, while I'm walking, I noticed that I can go into the sensations of sleepiness, so like really heavy eyes, heavy arms, heavy in the chest. And then there's a bit of separation where I'm actually watching the sleepiness, and it's sort of happening. And then the question that comes up is, who's watching?
Tua megu ye lu mho da me alu tua yin no so yin thai nai be a thut de chein no tua eng ngai tua da u sa ka long twat lai de ke eng ngai de ti na me da da me tu tait song sa na mho de aku cha lo tua thai chein no tait a myai me ya da me tua ka ma yin le ti bo chu sa de a lo lo yin ti bo chu sa la sha bro ti bo chu sa tua ba de li cha mi so ta kha le eng ngai da win lai le de sait tha ma le de khana ko ri le de let ti le de a lo myo da me nan nan sait ka kwa de So the wisdom is working a bit. And when there's this slight separation, sense of separation, he says, then, you know, the sloth and torpor can never overwhelm the mind. It can just never sort of grow out of proportion. And if awareness grows and becomes part of the awareness, then he says, then it becomes strong enough so that even as it watches the sleepiness can be handled or maybe fade away. But of course, it's not important for the sleepiness to disappear. What's more important is for the mind to understand something through this experience. He says, so your question was, who is watching? What about who is sleepy? He said,
what is
Dutraka badu te ba le bo engai da o pimman ba 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 engai da. Once the mind is interested and it wants to investigate, yeah, that gives the mind wisdom and that helps to be stronger and not be involved in the sleepiness.
Well, because I feel more awake when I'm talking. Like the sleepiness is
I don't know him. Yes, when awareness and samadhi grow, then yeah, sleepiness goes. He says if you had been resistant to the sleepiness, you didn't, you wanted to go away, it would feel worse and worse. Yeah, okay. He says, so he always says, to say that awareness and concentration are strong, it means that wisdom must be present. There's no resistance in the mind. So that's right attitude when there's wisdom. No resistance. Then he says, if the mindfulness is continuous, that awareness and concentration will grow stronger and be able to handle whatever is observing. 5, 6, 5.
I find that on the trees, for instance, like this, it's relatively easy to generate the wisdom factor. But when they go home, it's quite hard in that after the course of a few days or weeks, it slowly seems to erode. And for me, the scariest place is my office. In my office, I'm constantly talking to people who are demanding or angry or listening to the greed factor. And I would like to really appreciate any suggestions you can make on office practice as opposed to
retreat practice. Retreat master, no. Yang Pao Ban Ne Atura Makap Re Tu Ka Ka Aim Bian Wai Ne Wu
Yang Ba
Atu Ne Pie Atu
Wu Yang Ba
He said to just the beginning of your question when you said, you know, your the difficulties when you go home, he says you need more wisdom because you said, you know, yeah. And then he's So he says in the office, every time you see these people who come at you with greed and anger and so on, he says, every time you see a person like that, how does the mind feel? Your mind feel. He says their greed and aversion is their problem. He says, is there greed or aversion in this mind? He says, well, yes, basically. He says, you know, there's always this object-mind relationship. He says, and generally for all people, it's when the object is good, the mind reacts in a good, in a positive way. When the object is negative, the mind reacts in a negative way. When the situation is good, same, likewise, or bad. And he says, and depending on the level of understanding of this mind, of the mind, he says, when the mind, when there's been a practice of meditation to understand the mind, and many things have been understood, he says, then that mind gains more and more stability. Then it's not so much affected by the positivity or negativity of the outside.
kuwa ato na yi mishuwa fi na yi ce la miso mi ne ku si ka pya ma ni ya ma bu ji na to biya mi lu ya la
so if
ce la ti la.
So if we've, you know, if we've been practicing and we know the practice has been maturing, and he says that there are signs, you know, the mind becomes less and less reactive and understands this also. He says, so for the ordinary person, sure, he said, if they go to the nightclub, their mind is this way. If they go to church or the monastery, their mind is this way. But he says, once you know the practice is maturing, the mind is more mature. He says, that mind knows it needs to make greater effort to learn to understand so that it will be more free. He says, and as the investigation continues, the mind starts to understand that if it needs to react to the object, you know, if it's always influenced by the tone of the object, then the mind starts to realize it's not free. He says, ordinarily in the world, he says, the mind is always reacting to all its sense contact with liking and disliking. But once the practice of meditation is taken on, then the mind starts to investigate, okay, liking arises, but why? Disliking arises, all right, but why? He says, for example, we can have the same object. One object, one person, and somebody might like this object, another person does not like this object. Why? Is it because of the object that the liking and disliking arises? Because of the state of mind. Right, so it's dependent on the individual mind's judgment or opinion of that object. He says, once the mind has decided this is good, the mind will react in a good way. Once it has decided this is not good, it will react in a negative way. He says, when the judgment is seen, he says, then it's also to recognize, is this judgment of the quality of an object, is that true wisdom or is that greed or aversion? Because he says, is it wisdom or delusion? He says, once it is delusion, the mind will then react with greed or aversion. It will prefer or not prefer. Whereas if it's wisdom, the mind will see it as it is and then it doesn't react. It doesn't have a liking or disliking. So for the first question here, could you repeat the first question to me again? Sorry. You said when you're beginning to see.
Right.
Akudo, the born Pinopian Ezra.
Yes.
Right. So that's one. And the second question, tu dutiya megwa, tu di luna khana khana tui ya le. Khana khana tui ya la, tu a yinwa yan doza phit si le tu. Dabe aku cha lo chi chi ne, di lu paw ma tu doza yo yo la le. A la soe tu a thu mu tet la, tu tet la bi lo pyo. Ero, elo myo lu ko bwa ma shi yin, ka kaung da paw le. He says in Burmese they call it someone who helps you to fulfill your paramis. He says it's because of Devadatta, you know, the Buddha's cousin who was very mean to him, yeah, that the Buddha was able to fulfill many paramis. He says when we have, you know, like watched our anger so much and truly known the suffering that anger brings to us, he says when we see somebody else in anger, it's easy to feel compassion for that person, to feel empathy for them, rather than feel angry with them. Because you know how they feel, you can empathize. Six.
So two sentences struck something for me that about the concept of experiencing a state where you very much feel like this very clearly observing your mind and body as if it were this other entity, or you are another entity,
yeah.
Washing it. Out of that state, I find there's a tremendous amount of clarity and equanimity, and just it feels like when I'm in that state, my mind's reaction to things is naturally wisdom, like and see these things.
Yeah.
But I don't understand, and I see the way conditions are creating these different reactions. It feels like a lot of wisdom is present, but then I don't see the conditions that lead to that state. Mm-hmm. And I'm aware that because it's so pleasant to be experiencing that state of freedom and wisdom, that there's some attachment to that. And as these sort of waves come and then they go, and I don't seem to have any kind of control over it, sort of the question for me is like, that. So that's just another state, you know, as permanent as any other, and kind of like, since I don't understand the conditions that lead to that, and that in connection to what he says about trying to practice the constant mindfulness, it seems like sometimes it seems to lead to something and sometimes it doesn't, and I get very confused about it. if I'm not that space of clarity.
Okay, let me just convey that to him.
Let me see if I can get
a handle on that. Sure. Then you look at what? The car lady low. Coco go cheat a shin it out. Shin it to a pin it out of the theater. Gin it out of the theater. Shin it on six him a HM. Gin it, no, yeah, she let the cans out. And also, Peter had you, or let him be thin little yard. Peter had a piano machine. I don't know, Peter. Tell me, Bob Namalu, Bob Benolo, deceit in Pilal and Namalu. He says, in general, you know, moments of, you know, clarity and wisdom come when the factors, the qualities of, in the mind, the five faculties are in balance. Okay, but he says to recognize the conditions that led to that sort of state, he says, will just take a lot more investigation. He says, if you keep at it, you'll notice more and more often when it comes, when it doesn't come, and then the mind will start to see what it was doing before that led to that, and then it will start to notice what kind of energy it was using, what sort of attitudes it was having, what ideas it was holding, whether it was, you know, what it was doing, and what state it was in before it led to that. So this will take time for all that to be recognized. And he says, the trick is to remember that you want to recognize these things. And also, he says, once the mind starts to recognize the conditions, then the mind knows how to set the conditions for these conditions to arise more and more frequently so that these states can be... so that these great states can come more frequently. So you need a lot of practice. We just need to practice a lot.
Right. I guess the sense I'm having is like just trying to figure out how to want to fill these conditions, but not want to be attached to wisdom. The state is a very wholesome state. Definitely. But then there's the feeling that when it's not there, there is the attachment of wanting to be experiencing the wisdom that was flowing the day before, where we're just.
He says, you know, when we haven't fully learned a lesson, it will present itself to us over and over again until we really got it. He said, but once you get it, once the lesson is learned, he says, then that lesson will present itself to us again. He says greed is so sly, you know. He said it's really smart, like you figure out not to expect this much. Yeah? And you say, okay. And you let go and the practice becomes smooth. It gets sneakier. A more subtle kind of greed comes in. He said, it will get you time and time again. He says, watch out for greed. He says, you know, when you gain in rank, like in the army, so say you're in the good army. You're in the good army, yeah? He says, the defilement in the bad army, they gain rank too. Yeah, he says, so when you get smarter, they get smarter. He says, a good situation, how long will it last anyway? He says, you know, we work so hard to understand something, and for a while, it goes fine. But he says, the next challenge will come. To understand more, the next difficulty will present itself. Much more subtle, much more difficult things will always. He says, when we've dealt with the gross level defilements, we think, oh, okay, life is okay now. He says, but if we look carefully, he says, there's all this subtle stuff that still needs to be worked on. He says, it's like, you know, purifying metals and all that. When they purify the gross impurities, it's really easy. Those processes are really easy. He says, but when a metal or something is like 99% pure and you've got the last 1%, that's the hardest to remove. Much work to do, hello, yeah, you see that. It's 7-8.
So, I've been enjoying my practice, and in the process, noticed some attachment to the results of practice. disappointment as well. But now I really try to bring, try to ask nothing of my practice either. I just practice and attempt to practice just for its own sake. And the question really is that okay to really ask nothing of the practice?
Sure. He said that's more right. He says, you know, there's only cause and effect. When the conditions or the causes are present, the effect comes naturally. But if we're waiting for the effect to come, that's greed. But he says, when there's wisdom, wisdom understands. If it just works on the conditions, it's a no-brainer. The effect will come. So wisdom doesn't bother about whether the effect will come. So, he says, you know, but the mind is really tricky. He says, we may feel now we have no expectation, but the mind will just sneak in and expect again. You know, it will just come in. So he says, you know, the benefits of the practice, he says, instead of looking at the experiences that accrue as benefit, he says, watch the mind. He says, so then you will notice if greed sneaks in. You're nine.
I retired now, I have more time to read. How does one remain aware while reading?
Reading. What are you reading? He says, what is reading?
What is reading?
Who is reading? What is reading?
The mind is reading.
Sikapan.
Mm-hmm.
Can't you know that mind? The mind is reading, the mind is understanding, using its...
Is it necessary to make an effort to do that?
He says... He says, not deliberately in that time. He says, more overall to all time that we practice to deliberately learn to recognize the mind at work, then it sort of flows into everything. For someone who knows their mind all the time, if it's a habit to recognize the mind, he says, it's not difficult to see it. Whatever we do, we use the mind to do. The mind pays attention, makes effort, focuses, and things like that. He says somebody who's always watching the mind just sees the mind is doing it. He says somebody who's been practicing a long time must become able to see all this.
Sometimes I feel I get lost in what I read.
Yeah, so you read. Yes, when there's a lot of interest in what's being read, yeah, the mind kind of gets sucked in.
So then it's an effort not to get lost.
He says, so long as you remember, it's enough. If you've noticed that it's in, that's enough to bring it back. He says, you can find out for yourself what the difference is when you're like completely absorbed in reading or when you're relaxed in reading. Find out what difference it makes. The tension is different.
It's a similar question. If I'm doing something physical, then it seems relatively easy. It seems to be find myself, you know, sitting, reading, thinking, planning, whatever. But it's a kind of a little checkout in that, checkout in that, kind of like that, which feels almost like a distraction. Like, you know, I need to, especially if there's time pressure, I gotta get this done. So then it feels like the way that it works in the world is just to lose oneself in it. It's finished and it sort of, you know, come up to the surface again, come, you know, come up for breath,
yeah,
and be mindful again. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. That'd be alright. Lepakuba, I love you. She left alone near a low meal, so in it was the detail. Do you know my hope and Uba to Kanakone, a low load, a low day, a low day? To sing a low load or a low day, to the cool, to Sinza PM, to planning charm, Sayibo Sinzame, a low meal, so in it, to Atom Wabalula, so Zang is hanging there. Holding a low meal, yeah, in it. ตัวสิงห์ก็อะไรอยู่ที่เนี่ยตัวสิงห์ก็อะไรอยู่ที่เนี่ยตัวสิงห์ก็อะไรอยู่ที่เนี่ยตัวสิงห์ก็อะไรอยู่ที่เนี่ยตัวสิงห์ก็อะไรอยู่ที่เนี่ยตัวสิงห์ก็อะไรอยู่ที่เนี่ยตัวสิงห์ก็อะไรอยู่ที่เนี่ยตัวสิงห์ก็อะไรอยู่ที่เนี่ยตัวสิงห์ก็อะไรอยู่ที่เนี่ยตัวสิงห์ก็อะไรอยู่ที่เนี่ยตัวสิงห์ก็อะไรอยู่ที่เนี่ยตัวสิงห์ก็อะไรอยู่ที่เนี่ยตัวสิงห์ก็อะไรอยู่ที่เนี่ยตัวสิงห์ก็อะไรอยู่
encourages people to learn how to be with the mind or be recognizing the mind all the time. He says, you know, knowing the body and knowing the mind is different. You need to focus a little bit to know the body. But when it comes to the mind, he says, you don't need to do that sort of thing. He says, because the awareness is in there with the mind. The awareness part of the mind is already there. You don't have to do anything. The moment you focus, actually you kind of, it's like over-focusing. You kind of go beyond the object. It's like Mother Goose with her glasses on. You know, you kind of miss the trees for the woods or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, woods for the trees, whatever. So it just requires skillfulness, which means lots of practice. So when you're doing work using the mind, like thinking, planning, writing, he says, it's only if you're skillful at knowing the mind that you can recognize the mind is doing this. He says when he, you know, started trying to practice at home, he started with trying to wash the body, and he would, you know, walk to work, and he'd try to be aware of walking, and after 2-3 steps, he lost mindfulness, and over again. Then he started asking himself why. And so when he checked, it was because his mind was ahead of him. He was thinking about what to do when he got to work. He was also eager to get to work, like, you know, he needed to get there on time and all that. So he started realizing everything is happening up there, so he started watching that mind more and more. He said, then the body isn't important at all. He says we need to use this mind to do those works. He says, but we don't know this mind, so of course we'll lose mindfulness. He says, even if we pay attention to the body, we use this mind to pay attention to the body. But if you don't know the mind, how can you know? Talking about the 5 precepts or the 8 precepts?
I guess I'm more, and this could just be really my ignorance about this topic. I thought that one takes
you're talking about monastic?
Yes, yes.
Oh,
monastic,
okay.
Prison.
Okay.
And that why maybe specifically for Sydow, specifically something who's been a lay person, he has chosen this path with his sort of, but at the same time with his relaxed attitude about things, about, you know, see the balance of the mind and the awareness, and yet he's choosing to restrain himself, I'm assuming in some capacity, and not do some things that the human beings find, you know, just a joyful, fulfilling activity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
that's what you're saying. Yeah. So, Pongyi Pongyi Dila, Amyai Guapa, Ere Matu, Kamura Namla, Gamatu Nala Tema, Ukma, Mugazaru, Bolu Mugazaru, Baru, Alumur, Alumur, Shida Boli, Gamatu Sinare, Dari Loyle, Kili them a Pavere Loy, Ba. อ่าอภิเษกเลยป่ะโน้ตทุกข์อ่ะนะคะไม่ใช่ไม่ผิดอยู่นอกทุกข์อ่ะบาแล้วสรุปว่าเนี่ยว่าอุเซนอันนี้เนี่ยอุเซนอ่ะหลุดแล้วผิดปุ๊ดเนาะหลุดผิดเพราะอุเซนตื่นในตัวอ่ะดิเราเรลัคซ์ผิดแต่กิเลสเราคิดในตามันติผิดแต่ผิดแต่หาผิดแต่อันนี้ไอ้หลุดမျိုးนี้สรุปว่าถ้าผิดโหลดิโลโคเท้งชุ่มไว้หานี่กูอยู่ไล่ตาเลยป่ะพ่อนี่เวเวตันเนี่ยดาริอยู่ไล่กูเท้งไล่ตาเลยไอ้หลุดမျိုး He says one of the reasons that there are so many rules for the monastics is because it's supposed to be that that you become a monastic because your aspirations are very high. So the intention is to become an arahant, not just like maybe just get enlightened half the way or something like that. So that's why they're willing to take on all this stuff. The robe is called, I don't think it's sign, he used the word sign, but it's called like a sign of the, yeah, of an arahant or something like that, yeah. The symbol of an arahant.
Yeah.
So if the aspiration is very high, then the practice becomes, you know, there's many things to practice or...
Yeah.
And he says, so I mean traditionally in the Theravada model you have like four stages of enlightenment. Okay? And in the first stage of enlightenment, when they kind of sort of say, well, that means you will get enlightened right up to the fourth stage eventually at some point. But just to get to that first stage of enlightenment, he says, the defilements don't disappear at that stage. All that happens is that you lose wrong view completely. And an ordinary person who's a enlightened at the first level, if someone's enlightened at the first level and is just a lay person, he says the precepts that they keep naturally pure are just the five precepts. It's only if somebody becomes enlightened like up to the third level, that's just before arahant, yeah, to the third level, then for that person, what we talk of is the eight precepts, the kind of defilements that are, you know, sort of restrained by the eight precepts, for that person at third level in enlightenment, those defilements don't arise anymore. He says, and so the Buddha's intention in, you know, making all these rules was because he understood very well the nature of the defilements. He says, if you give the defilement a little weight, you'll find its way to grow big. So that's why there was all this restraint, all this sila to, you know, develop more samadhi and panya, wisdom. He says, for example, being able to eat what we like being able to take our own food and eat it, and
having to eat whatever is given to us. It makes a big difference in the state of mind. He says, so imagine the difference in the state of mind when we choose our food and we take what's given.
I just want to clarify this whole idea about not seeing you guys like prison and going to invite you out.
Yeah, he wants to play too.
Is the idea there that the precept
desire to
play frisbee?
And
restrain
what?
The restraint is somehow useful in that.
Okay. Just because he is in robes, he's a monk, so it's just a form of following the rules. Jesus, if he was a lay person, of course he'd join in. But because he's got on the robe, so following the rules and so on. He says just different levels of practice. So at a basic level, when we're just trying to practice, it's not a problem. He says, but maybe if the aspiration is very high and we're, reaching for something else, maybe then at that level, maybe it's a problem.
The joy of playing frisbee is giving up and
moving
for
someone to hold the body. Frisbee gazare pioche muore, te cha haluji no, luchare, elu yulare. He says, at that point, it's because the joy of playing frisbee is very superficial happiness. He says, given the same amount of time and energy you have to expend, he says, and if there is a known source of higher happiness, then that person would stay with that. The Buddha talked about levels of happiness, and there is sensual happiness from sensual pleasures, happiness from concentration, jhana, and happiness from wisdom, jnana. But he used the same word, happiness. So he says, to each his own level. He says, all this throwing and catching and all, now he doesn't really want to do it. He sees the how tiring it can be for the man. The body and mind don't want to do it anymore. Sorry?
Did not
wisdom
be functioning in the
system? And I know in that. He says, but is it okay not to do that? Yes, but he says, okay, for your question, it's possible. If you're practicing, even as you play frisbee, wisdom can arise. Yes.
Yep.
He says when he was in lay life and, he used to go jogging and exercising and all that, he would always be mindful.
About it, think about doesn't move. It just sits there. So how do you deal with, you know, like really heavy emotional
ตัวตู้เนี่ยบ่ยัดจานเนี่ยไปพี่ๆบ่ไปพี่ๆอะหลุเมียวตัวอ่ะจี้เจ๋ซะกางเปียวสู่มิบรอตัวอ่ะกวยร่องมุโลโลผิดเลยเออสึกกะยังทุกข์อย่างเลยตัวดอตาผิดแต่วนแน่เลยกิลตี้ผิดแต่อะหลุเมียวเรียนอายผิดแต่อะหลุเมียวผิดตัวสึกกะไม่รู้ความเลยดีหาเนี่ยถ่ายจี้มั้ยสู่ดีหาถ่ายไปแล้วจี้มั้ยสู่เนี่ย When the emotions are very strong, he says it doesn't work to just sit and watch them directly, especially if your store of awareness, concentration, wisdom, you know, whatever you've been building up, is not as strong as the emotion. So it won't be easy to just sit with it. So if you want to work with it, so you have to use a lot of wisdom. If you can accept the line of reasoning that all this emotion is, you know, not you, emotions are just nature. If you can accept that line of reasoning and observe them in that way, it might be possible to observe them. But if the mind cannot accept that it's not personal, then it might be more helpful to just do some normal, like paying attention to some object to calm the mind down first. Yeah. When in his life he became very depressed because he had learned to practice, he was skillful at practicing, but he did not really apply it in his life. And it got to the point he got very depressed. And when he decided to work with the depression using meditation, he says for him it was easy because he already had the skill. He knew how to be easy with the mind, just be with it. But if somebody hasn't had this practice before, then it's not easy to just look at the mind like that when the mind is in great difficulty. So it's better to start by observing something just to calm the mind down first. So first, don't think about the problem you have at hand and see if the mind can pay attention to something neutral like the breath or something and build up some stability of mind, some steadiness. And if the mind will be calmer from having watched something else for some time, he says once the mind is calmer, then you can come back and see if you can watch that, the emotion.
Sometimes there's a question of what to do next, or a question of morality, similar questions around whose fault, what was this correct action, what is the lesson. So that's part of the thinking of these bigger questions. But perhaps just focusing on an object and calming the mind would help the questions to become
clearer. He says, when the mind is in chaos, he says, don't think about what to do. All the mind will think of is, all the answers it will give you will be negative. Okay, Kathleen first and then Dennis. Okay.
On the obsessive mind, you know, it's like it has a habit of obsessing on something, you know, something during the day, and then it will rehash the whole thing over and over, like a tape, you know, record it, just go back and play the whole thing out, come back and play it out again, and it's like, it's all this note, obsessing mind, you know, it's sort of,
You note obsessing mind?
Well, see, I'm obsessing, oh. And so, I don't know, to label it like, oh, I'm obsessing, or just, you know, it's not pleasant. You know, there's like life goes on, and it's like it's like stuck. We're just, you know, how to work with that. Like, so there's aversion to this replaying and replaying. It's like, okay, you know.
Dua sekataku mcayu taka taka dihau di jangyao taka taka kazapila.Recorder lo ber, piang piang pora. Tu apa? Bawa tu apa tu set tuan ni lah. Ini sikit tuan tin ni deh. Ini, kalau tuan di sini gua tak 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 lo dah macai pu.
Dan square.
Isu so you have. So it's rehashing probably because there was some aversion in the situation, and now you have aversion to the rehashing. So there's aversion to
square.
It doesn't with desire, you know, pleasant. Check
it out. Let Taka Taka say that.
Yeah, say it about what? Check that.
He says that's the nature of the mind. What it likes and dislikes, it remembers all the time. He says sometimes even very subtle things, like we might not notice we like something, but it's presented to us in our thoughts. If something is presented to us two or three times in our thoughts, you know the mind likes or dislikes that. He says, so first step is to develop the right attitude, a right view towards this mind. He says, to get rid of it has nothing to do with you. He says, so put in the right thought, the right view, okay? Remind yourself consciously, thoughts are just thoughts. A feeling is just a feeling. So think this way every now and again, and then pay attention to what's happening. Think this thought first, before you pay attention. So now he says, the problem is not the rehashing that's natural to the mind. What the mind does naturally is not a problem, he says. It's our judgment of it, coming in and not liking it, that becomes the problem.
So there's the judging. So I'm
so
stuck there, judging.
So I'm stuck, Peter. I'll judge you. He said, so what you can do is only two things. Try to accept that this is happening, and to help you accept it, use right thinking, you know, this concept of right view, right thought. Consciously think these thoughts, try to understand the idea behind it, and then be aware continuously of that mind. It's only because you think that's a problem that the mind is like this. Do.
It's actually very similar. I've been using the phrase, angering is just angering. Doubt is just doubting, or fear is just fearing.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if that was sugarcoating this word.
Yes.
Or is it better to, is that skillful to get a little space and then look at it directly? Because if I say fearing is just fearing, it's not actually looking at the fear, it's just identifying the fear as a state of mind. It's
so present. When you've done that, when you've done this fear is just fearing or anger is just angering, then you get some space.
Yes.
But then you don't do anything else.
Well, there's the tension in the body. So what's happening is I didn't see it is fear. That's how I say fear is just fear. So that gives this, that releases that space. It gives me peace. Yes. Then the motivation kind of drops away because it's gone.
Tua alu itu na tiaw de, na tiaw de. Yo waro tua setibu, macam. He says actually. He says using these words helps to alleviate the gross level suffering kind of thing. He says, but there's still subtle level expression of these emotions left, and we should look into that. He says, right view and right thought alleviates some of the suffering of the defilements, because, I mean, right view and right thought is also a kind of wisdom, and wisdom always helps to relieve. But he says, like, if we have emotions level 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, he says, when we do this kind of right thought and it works, it goes into maybe 5, 4, 3, 2. He says, but how we generally feel is when it's about 2, it's like we can cope with it, so it's okay. But it's not gone. How dare it? You look further. He says you have to investigate further. He says, you know, the words are mind is mind. The mind is just the mind. Feeling is just a feeling. He says when the mind really understands the purport of that, the meaning of that, he says when it really sees that, he says it goes to zero. That also helps. He says the reason why when we just use the thought, like, or the right, you know, the right view kind of thought, feeling is just feeling, just using the words to help us and thinking of the meaning, why it doesn't become zero is because it's not our wisdom yet. It's just borrowed wisdom, so it alleviates it only somewhat. Real wisdom, he says, you have to watch a lot. You have to keep investigating and getting information until the mind has gathered enough information for the mind to then make its own decision, understand its own thing. He says, just watch every time something arises. Just keep watching. Just watch. One, two, three.
I have an intention to do yoga daily. As I age, it seems to get more important. And I have the intention, I have the time, I have the desire. And for the last, let's say, couple of months, I can't get myself to do it. And I'm watching the resistance, I'm watching wanting to do it, and there seems to be, and I can stay on that level of the watching the mind and doing it, and I want to do the yoga. And it's, how do I get from the resistance into the action of doing the daily practice again? And it's really, I'm squeezed by this, and I can see how the resistance to it is creating more inability to get to do it, so I'm looking and soft.
So this is in a time when you have the time, like you could do it right now, but the mind resists doing it, although it wants to do it.
Yes, and I can't seem to unwind it, so I actually am doing the practice of the yoga.
So you're doing it?
No, I'm not.
Oh, so you're not doing it?
I want to do it.
Because if you force yourself to do it, it feels...
I can't seem to find the place of choice to force myself.
Okay.
I have the space.
Okay. Tu mesti lupa tu. Tu yoga ni dah lupa cina. Yoga licin kan? Tu ni dah lupa cina. Dah macam tu ah. Ia no amian lupa. Kau tu ah. Ada cili bo, ye cili lupa. Kan zara. Dah macam di nafsun tu lama berlupa lah. Seka. Lupa cina tu. Tu ah. Lupa yang kau mula jang. Kau. ยีเวเจตัวชื่อเลยลุพ่อยีเวเจชื่อเลยสันดาชื่อเลยอเฉิงชื่อเลยเนียชื่อเลยมันมันแล้วอกูดีมาอกูชื่อแต่เฉิงมาอกูลงอีอย่างเลยสึกกับเตี้ยลงลงเอาเตี้ยลง Malochina Sega, a young one appeared on the
road.
He says it's a huge disparity. He says it sounds more like the mind doesn't want to do it, he says, than wants to do it. And he says, if, you know, for example, you're speaking from a place of understanding that yoga is beneficial for you, he says, why doesn't the mind want to do it? Why is there this huge difference?
I don't know.
Nothing. Then just sit and watch that mind that doesn't want to do it. Just watch that, the feeling of not wanting to do it, until it presents you an answer for why it's there. He says, not wanting to do something is aversion. Resistance is aversion. He says, understanding that something is beneficial for you, that's wisdom. Like, which is stronger, basically? When the resistance decreases, the mind will be able to do it.
So,
he says, when the mind feels anything, he says it's because there's an idea. There's always an idea or thought behind the feeling, but you don't see what it is. So what you need to do, he said, is sit at the times when you're feeling tired and all that. Not sit as in physically, but sit with it. Like when you're feeling this resistance and all, he says, just be with it. Then you will start to notice the thoughts and ideas your mind holds that are feeding this resistance. ตัวอัธรเองเนี่ยตัวสะอัธรตัวอยู่นิเวอร์ซิตี้แทคตัวตัดตาโหเวอร์อยู่ดิโลลงตาเนี่ยสึกอ่ะอกโนโหหมาตันติญเนี่ยหมาทาญเนี่ยบาริตัดลาเลยสรว่าตีนโหตีนทาเราก็เปียอมัสสุตีนไอ้โหลงชินเนี่ยไอ้โหลမျိုးสึกเนี่ยลงตัวだแม้โหอกูอ่ะเนเน่ปูปุ๊บแล้วโหดีไดน์ผิดตาลิโหตีนเนี่ยบ่だแม้ตะไผ่เนี่ยสึกอ่ะตะคามีคันซ่าอะไรโหเนเน่ไอ้โหลแอคทีฟผิดตาลิ
ဒီချာလောက်တာကိုပိုကောင်းမဲ့လစ်ထင်းတယ်ဒီလိုဒီတိုင်းလေးပဲတင်းနေတာယုံနဲ့မလုံလောက်ဘူးဗောဒါပေမဲ့တစ်ခါလေးလည်းဒီဘက်ကိုတစ်ဖြည်းဖြည်းပြောင်းလာပြီဖြစ်နေတာတွေသိယုံပဲဒါပေမဲ့ဟိုစိတ်ကတစ်ခါလေးရှော့သွားရင်တော့သူရှော့လိုက်တယ်မလုံဘူးဗောဒါပေမဲ့ရှော့လိုက်ဒါပေမဲ့ဒီခုဖြစ်နေတာသူတတိချာမျိုးအဲ့ဒါဆိုဘူးရောရှော့
He says, when you notice it gets like tense because or too much, too agitated, he says, right, sort of step away from it. But the rest of the time, you can just investigate these two minds doing their thing whenever they come in. And it's true if... And he says, it's true that too much investigating can be agitating, so that's when you know when to... And he says, don't worry about forgetting. He says, when the mind truly understands something, you'll never forget it your whole life. You won't need to put it down in the book, he said, it's in here. Anytime you think of it, your mind will remember. All it needs is for that wisdom to be strong enough.
thinking.